And we are back once again. Parish of the Patriots, believe it or not, 368 times. That's right. We are on episode number 368. Once again, thank you for joining me for this week's show. I am sitting down on recording this show on Sunday instead of my usual round. I usually do it on Saturdays. This is Sunday morning. It is Easter Sunday. We're going to discuss that a little bit, and along with other various crazy stuff. Crazy stuff going on. We have no shortage of things to discuss. If you do get something out of the show, you want to throw something in the plate, we provide a way to do that. We got the snail mail. That's it. Look at the description page for the show. At the bottom, there is the snail mail address. Put it in an envelope. Put a stamp on it. What could be easier? The blockchain consists of the multiple hands of vibrant diversity through the U.S. postal system to reliably bring it my way. And it is always appreciated. This week, I've got a lot going on. I wasn't with Sven. I wasn't able to be with Sven on this past Friday show, the Daily Nationalist. I just got a lot going on. And last night, I'm laying in bed and thinking, okay, in the morning, I got to sit down. I got to get this show going. And it dawned on me, I never got by to I didn't get to check the mail this past week. So if you did put something in there and you're like, he should have got it by now, it's not there. And you start to question or doubt the blockchain of diversity of the U.S. Postal Service. Don't let your faith waver. I didn't get to the mailbox this past week. I just got a lot going on. I got a lot going on right now, and I'm trying to run around. I'm keeping things juggled, and I'm keeping this show coming your way. So I will try to, for sure, get by and check it. So it is appreciated. I'll tell you in advance, it means a lot. I do appreciate it. And yeah, as I said, I'm recording this on Sunday, so you know the world blows up on Monday, and that's why we're not discussing it here today. It is Easter Sunday as I record this, like I say, and I thought we'd discuss that a little bit. It's kind of like, well, you know, Easter will be over for y'all by the time you hear this, but it doesn't matter. We'll discuss it. Because we celebrate as believers, we celebrate every day. We live the life every day. But Easter's just one of those, you know, it's one of those holidays, is so celebrations that kind of, you know, we kind of skip over. Christmas is a big one, you know, because we're reminded because of all the Santa Claus stuff they do every year. I mean, you can't forget Christmas. It's in your face starting in October. And of course, you know, as Christian believers, you know, we celebrate the birth of Christ at Christmas. Easter, we kind of, you know, if you've got kids, you're putting out the dying eggs maybe and stuff like that. But Easter's a lot more of it. It kind of gets passed over, you know. I mean, we celebrate it, but it's not anywhere near on the tier that we do Christmas. And I was just thinking, what can we say? We all know what it represents for us as believers, the resurrection of our Savior, Jesus Christ, Son of God, who died and 3 days later was raised from the dead. And I was thinking about this context between Christmas and Easter. And, you know, it really, between the two, and it represents life itself, doesn't it? I mean, at Christmas, we celebrate the birth of Christ, Christ coming into this world, and the beginning. It's the beginning of what God was doing, bringing this ability, this gift, this hope of salvation, this road for this path forward for us in our faith. And of course, Christ lived his life and did his work. If he would have just said, well, I'm just do this carpentry thing, then nothing would have been accomplished. He did his work. He accomplished his work, the work of the Father during his lifetime. And then, of course, it comes to an end in Jesus' case, in a very horrific, brutal fashion. I think sometimes we should spend more time slowly going through the process of the crucifixion and really, you know, internalizing what that means, you know, just the suffering of it. It was literally being tortured to death in the most slow and agonizing way possible. And then ultimately, as we celebrate here on Easter, the resurrection from the dead. But see, this all represents, we obviously Jesus is unique, but also it represents the process we all go through. You know, we've all already, you're listening to this, we've been born into this life. We're in that middle part right now. We're going through the process. Jesus paved the way and pointed the way and instructed us and showed us the way of life. We follow that path as best we can. We take advantage. We make use of this salvation that he brought to us. But ultimately, and hopefully not tortured to death in the most horrific manner possible, but one way or the other, we face death, and death comes in all manner for us. You know, if you die, or, you know, if you die suddenly, you know, you're going along like you just have a heart attack and you drop and you die. And people, you know, nobody's ever satisfied with the job death does, are they? You know, unless they think somebody that really deserves it gets it. But otherwise, nobody's ever satisfied. Death never gets a good job review. Everybody just complains about everything he does. If you die suddenly, you just have a heart attack and you drop. Nobody says, wow, he went quickly without a lot of suffering. No, they say he went too soon. You, sorry, death, you got here too early. As a part of this, we struggle and we go to doctors and we get treatments and take pills. Well, I don't very much, you know, but everybody to a certain extent. We do these things and we drag and we hope to live a little longer. We can do this. They tell you we can do this procedure. We can do that. And you get this treatment and put you on this prescription. And we can keep you going. But what does that mean? Ultimately, on long, if you keep living long enough, then you get to die slowly. You know, your body continues to fail. The older you get, if you're young, you know, you can only imagine. But I mean, even at my age, and I haven't hit 60 yet, you know, things don't work as well. Everything's more stiff and sore. And on a long enough time scale, you say, okay, well, I'm going to keep going. I don't want to drop dead suddenly of a heart attack. I want to keep going. But then what you ultimately face is everything starts failing slowly, bit by bit. You go from things being stiff and sore to things not working at all. Your body fails more and more. You're unable to get around. And the list of things you can do gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Maybe your mind starts going. Your mind doesn't go. I always like to point this out that, you know, we say that person that, you know, they just lost their mind. You know, I view it as, you know, you interact through this world with the physical. This whole thing, our bodies and the things that make up our physical bodies, this is the way our spiritual interacts with the physical world around us. This is what keeps us tied to this realm of time. And our mind, I believe our mind is, I think of our mind as spiritual. But for the spiritual mind to interact with the world, it has to have the physical, the brain. And I believe when we say somebody is getting, you know, senile, dementia, they're losing their minds. I really believe that you can't lose your mind. It's spiritual. You're losing the connection. Your brain is no longer, the connection's disrupted. It's like talking to somebody on your cell phone and you got a really crappy connection and it's, I know you've all had those conversations. You're talking to somebody and they get on a long-winded thing. They're telling you, they call you up. I got something going on. Man, what's going on? What's so important? And then it's like, man, that's what happens. You know, the signal keeps dropping. We get old enough, the physical brain can no longer starts losing the signal to the spiritual mind. And it does that. And as a result, people can't remember anymore. You know, they make a lot of mistakes. Sometimes it gets so severe they even can no longer speak. And then death finally comes. And what do people do? Complain about the job death does again. They suffered so long. Why, you know, I mean, death was taking its time getting here. The point here is death is coming. I don't think you should obsess over it. You know, you got these people that like this weird occultish obsession with death. It's not something you should obsess over, but I do think you need to look at him once in a while and just kind of nod your head. Knowledge is there. Remember. And when he does come around for you one day, you know, he's just doing his job. In whatever shape or form he comes in, he's just doing his job. But death does come around. And as it did, you know, Jesus died from this physical world, this created realm here. We will too. We deny it. We don't think about it. We push it off to the back of our mind. But eventually it is coming for all of us. But then we look towards what? The 3 days later, the raising from the dead. Now, the 3 days, you know, is interesting. You know, we didn't rise from the dead right away. And I think one of the things this can represent for us is that difference between perspectives. You know, what we look at the resurrection, the resurrection of the dead. And you know, I've had conversations with people and, you know, they say, well, you know, do we go be with God right away, or do you know, we just go to sleep in the ground, as they say? Do we just here waiting around? Because in the Bible, it's represented two ways. You know, it's represented both ways. Jesus told the criminal being executed with him, you know, today you're going to see, you know, paradise. But yet all throughout the Bible, it talks about someone dying and they go to sleep with their fathers till the day of the resurrection. I think that's kind of what the 3 days interim points to from our perspective, because from the perspective of the disciples, he was in the ground. He was in the tomb. They're waiting around. You know, they're like, well, he's gone now. He's in the tomb until the day he rose out of the tomb. On the spiritual side, when you die, you're done here. You're the last thread holding you to this physical temporal world is severed, and you go to the kingdom of God. You go to the spiritual. But from the perspective of those who remain, you're in the tomb. You know, you were in the, you know, Jesus was in the tomb 3 days. The disciples, they rolled the rock over the mouth of the tomb. Jesus was in there. They knew he was in there. They couldn't roll the rock out of the way and check, but they knew he was in the tomb. From their perspective, he had gone to sleep with the forefathers, as they say. But from the spiritual perspective, the last tie is broken, and that holds you to the physical, that held him to the physical realm, and he's moved to the spiritual realm. After the 3 days, the stone is rolled away. He comes out. He is resurrected, as is written in the Bible, the first fruits of the resurrection. Again, from the temporal realm, from the perspective of those that are here still, he came up out of the dead, out of the ground. He came back from the dead. Jesus himself was never asleep. As soon as that last, when he said, "It is done," and he gave up the ghost, he was released from this physical world. But from the perspective of those around, he's in the tomb. You see what I'm saying? Then he rises from the dead. That's how it works. From the spiritual perspective, this is over. And you're to the day of resurrection. But for those that are still here, yes, he's in the tomb. And you're waiting for him to come out. And he did. And this is the hope for all of us. And this represents, I guess, what I'm trying to get to, and I'm taking way too long to do it, and maybe I just haven't had enough coffee this morning, and I apologize for that, is this represents our life cycle. Jesus himself represents our life cycle. We are born into this world, into trouble, turmoil, struggle, strife. Yes, there's joy and there's happiness in there too. Oh, we do our work while we're here. And then at some point in time, we meet death. And death does his job and severs the tie that binds us to this temporal realm. And we're born into the next life. For those who remain, we are in the tomb. For those who happen to be here, when the day of resurrection comes, they will see people come out of the tomb. They will see people rising from the dead. Not like some zombie movie. They will just suddenly see people. And it's like, wait a minute, that guy's dead. They will rise from the dead. From the spiritual perspective, you're done. Once that severed, once death does his job and severs that last tie that's holding you here. What we read about, with Jesus, we're all following basically that same pattern. We're born into this world. We go through life. We do our work. We're going to die. We will be resurrected on the day of the dead. But from our own perspective, when that day comes, when we die, that tie is severed from the physical realm and we go on. We are outside of time then. So the day of resurrection is basically right then. I always say the day of the Lord. Everybody going to see the day of the Lord? Will I see the day of the Lord? The day you breathe your last, you will see the day of the Lord. But for those who are here, they're waiting the 3 days. The 3 days represents that time for the people who are still here as they wait for the day of resurrection. Jesus raised from the dead, being raised from the dead, is a hope for all of us. On Easter, we say he is risen. And so will we. We follow the same pattern. We are born into this world. Jesus was born into this world. We are doing our work in this world. We're going through this life. Jesus went through this world, went through this life. The Son of God faced death. We too will face death. There's no need in denying it. It's coming. He is risen. And ultimately, so will we. Anyway, I do wish you all well. It is a good time to stop and reflect on our faith. I'll be honest. I'm the one of the world's worst. As far as I kind of blow through these holidays. You know, even Christmas. I kind of truck through them because it's written one day is more holy than others, and for others every day is the same. I think it's a lot more important to me myself, you know, for every day to be holy to the Lord, to try to find a time to really set your heart upon God and look to the Lord, you know, versus, you know, a couple times a year I stop a minute and say, yeah, yes, thank you, Jesus. Now let's go have lunch. So I'm real bad about just kind of almost blowing past these days, but it is important to have set days like that to stop and reflect and remember who we are and who we belong to. But ultimately, it is a message of hope, at least for the believer. And who doesn't want hope? Especially in crazy days. And we are definitely in these crazy, crazy days. Speaking of crazy, did y'all see? I stomached it. I normally skip such things. But I did watch last week's Trump address to the nation. President Trump is addressing the nation. And I'm going to tell you, if y'all skip that, it was pure insanity. I watched it because I thought, you know, just like out of some sort of morbid curiosity. Kind of crazy stuff is he going to say? Is he going to announce the U.S. has won and they're getting out? And what we saw, it is just it was probably I've we've all seen a lot of different speeches and whatnot that Trump has done. And this was hands down the worst one ever. It was basically he's standing there reading. It's like when you see his Truth Social posts, and it's like these long walls of text with this rambling insanity. It was like he was standing there reading various Truth Social posts and just kind of mashed them all together, and they called it an address to the nation. One big Truth Social. But what really struck me is, again, is an example of this word spells, word magic they're trying to cast around. You know, it's like they're trying to hypnotize you or something. And you can figure where they're coming from, what they're trying to accomplish by it. And when you step back and once you realize what it is and you recognize what it is for what it is, it's interesting because it does tell you something. You know, you sit there and say Trump didn't say anything of significance in the speech, but he did. Not intentionally. He did if you're able to step back and not take essentially anything he says to heart. You can see what they're trying to do. And why they're trying to do it. Why they picked then for him to make this speech. I wish I would have had a pen and paper there. And I could have made a mark. I would have had to do it quickly, you know. But I wish I could have counted and made a mark how many times he used the word nuclear. Because it was probably a world record setting. This tells you something. Man, it was 2 days away, 2 weeks away. They were going to have the nuclear weapon. Nuclear weapon like nobody's seen before. I don't do a good Trump. But you know what I'm talking about. Everything was nuclear bomb, nuclear, and imminent threat. It was interesting to me because I think he mentioned Israel one time. This, like I said, this tells you a lot. It tells you what their internal real polling data shows, you know, not the polling the media puts out to also shape the narrative, but their actual internal polling, which is probably has been for a long time run by artificial intelligence. You know, just going over various people's social media posts and consolidating this information, and it spits out, this is where you're at. And I'm sure their data shows that everybody thinks this is a stupid war. It's an unnecessary war. And the only reason the U.S. is doing it is for Israel, which is for the most part correct. So what do they do? It's bad enough. They can't ignore it. And it's bad enough that he's got to go out there and try to cast a spell, as you would, on everybody. So he's doing nuclear, nuclear, nuclear. Just keep repeating it over and over again. I think it shows that when you see through the BS, it does how silly it is. Once the spell is broken and you see through it and you understand what they're doing, it just looks silly. You know, it's just frantically chanting over and over, nuclear, nuclear. Because if he keeps saying it. Kind of like the silliness involved in here, how he kept going on about, you know, Iran's military's decimated. They can't do anything to us. And then like a couple days later, multiple U.S. warplanes have been shot down. One of the things that has stuck with me through the years, when the Russia invasion of Ukraine kicked off, the special military operation, whatever you want to call it, when the Russia-Ukraine conflict kicked off. There was one, of course, this was during the Biden thing, the Biden administration. And I remember one of their officials, I don't remember which one it was, but one of the Biden people was talking and he made the statement. And this has stuck with me for years since I read this. But he made the statement. He says, it doesn't matter what Russia accomplishes on the battlefield, as long as we control the narrative, as long as we win the narrative. That has stuck with me through the years because that is so telling of where these people are coming from. And it's not just the Biden people. This is a Washington, D.C. thing, period. It doesn't matter what they accomplish in reality, as long as we control what people think. This to them is where the battlefield is your mind. This is why you have Donald Trump coming out and talking about you know, channeling his inner Netanyahu about any day now they were going to have a nuclear weapon. You're supposed to somehow forget about the fact that Netanyahu's been saying that since the early 90s. When this kicked off, Netanyahu said, I've been dreaming of this for 40 years. Well, his dream may have turned into a nightmare, but I guess his dream got to come true, but nobody else is getting a whole lot out of it. Now, one of the reasons it stuck with me is because how silly it is. Like, they're blow up all your dudes, but it doesn't matter as long as we can lie to everybody and convince them that they haven't. But this is the mindset of these people. You know, it's not a loss unless you all know it's a loss. This is why right now they're running around doing so much censorship. You know, Israel has a complete blackout. No information coming out how hard they've been getting pummeled. You know, every missile Iran launches, it just fell on an empty field. It just landed over here, you know, and didn't hurt anybody. If Israel admits anyone gets killed, they claim that, oh, some Palestinians got killed, so we don't care. This is their mindset. I do think it's silly because, again, eventually reality comes around. And this is what it looks like when that narrative control that they're so obsessed with completely starts collapsing. That's what we're seeing with this. This is why he had to come out and start saying nuclear, 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 nuclear over and over again. They're trying to save the spell by recasting it over and over again. They're trying to grab control of that narrative because it's collapsing, because it does matter what happens in reality. It does matter what happens on the battlefield. When they're blowing up your dudes and blowing up your airplanes and blowing up this and blowing up that, and then you go in and try to save a pilot and your other stuff gets blown up, you can't control the narrative because reality matters. When the world economy is facing a massive, at best recession, at worst total collapse, yeah, you're not going to be able to narrative control that because it affects everybody's life. It's not going to be something you can just claim is something different. So they frantically are trying to maintain that narrative control, and it's failing. It is failing on a mass scale, but that's what they've got. That's what they continue to do. It's just something. I perusing the internet and seeing various people talking about this and other people commenting on this complete insanity. It's a funny thing because I continue to, you see people of all walks of political leanings, by and large, are against this war. And, Trump's, again, I'm sure their actual polling, their data they actually collect is reflecting of this, that his support is collapse and freefall. Much worse, I can guarantee, much worse than what they're admitting to. It's one thing you could say, you know, all levels of the political spectrum agree on. But never forget the disingenuousness of the left. You know, people say this is something the right and the left agree on. Well, yes, but there is a but there. The left is disingenuous. This is, you know, they mock and ridicule MAGA, you know, the MAGA supporters. And, you know, those who have just turned it into a cult and it doesn't matter what Trump does. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got no problem with making fun of that. But the truth of the matter is people who were, quote unquote, MAGA, people who supported Donald Trump over the years, a lot of them have looked at this and said, yeah, no, I'm not supporting this. It's not right. Out of a principled position. They've turned it. They're like, yeah, no, I'm not supporting this. You know, I voted for this guy. I didn't. But this is what they say. You know, I voted for Trump because he said he wasn't going to do any more of these wars. And now he's doing it. That's it. I'm done. In other words, it is a genuine position And I applaud them for that. You know, it's something to be applauded. The left, on the other hand, I question how much they're actually against this, because the left cares about power. You know, it's, yes, they're against it, but let's be honest. If there was a Team D president, would they be just as against it? I see these comments posted on the interwebs. And, you know, you voted for this, you voted for Trump. They act as though this just started with Donald Trump. Like if Kamala or any other Team D representative was in power, anything different would be going on. As if the Biden administration didn't sit by and continue to fund and give weapons to Israel so that, you know, they could continue the Gaza genocide. You know, sincere Trump supporters, MAGA, if you would, have at least stepped back and said, no, this isn't what I voted for. I don't support it. They're not pretending that it's something else. I'm not talking about the people that have gotten to the point of cultists and they'll support no matter what he does. I'm talking about genuine people that say, yeah, no, this is, no, I didn't vote for Donald Trump for this. You know, at least they're being sincere. I know what the left is. You know what the left is. And yeah, it's all well and good to say, oh, well, we agree that this war is stupid. But they're disingenuous. And they're just looking at this as a political opportunity and a way to possibly gain even more power. Whenever I see someone posting a comment along the lines of, well, it's okay, once we get the Democrats in there, things are going to change. And they have the nerve to mock the Red Hat cultists. And they don't see the how they're just the other side of the same coin. The backdrop of all of this is the U.S. empire is coming to an end. You know, it is. It's just, that's it. You know, you're not going to vote someone else in there and things are going to change. And I'm at this point, you know, can we pull the scab off already? You know, I was talking earlier about death coming. And because death comes to empires too. And it comes in different forms. And, you know, personally, I would rather have death just come one day, boom, and I'm done, versus dragging it out over years and years and possibly losing the connection with my mind and my ability to function in life. You know, the U.S. empire is dying. Can we just get it over with? Just pull the plug already. It's done. You're going to turn it around. Nobody's going to turn it around. And they're just dragging it out. And it's just getting more and more sad. There's no need for it to remain on life support, thrashing around, lashing out, killing people in its death throes. Just pull the scab. Can we not just stop and say, this thing is over. This experiment is over. This thing is done. Let's move on. I say we give the leftists can have their little portion. They can go over there and make Commutopia or whatever the hell they want to do. And the rest of us can try to live normal. Let's break it up. Let's get into smaller countries. Let's start all over. Can we do that? Do we really have to keep dry? It's like when you see a married couple and you've known a married couple, maybe a relative or friend, and they're married, and it's obvious they're done. They have nothing good to say about each other. They can't. It's evident that they don't like each other. You get two people living together and they hate each other. It gets to that point. We've all seen it. We've all known it. Some of you may have had parents, grew up with parents that lived that way. And everybody is just like, why are you all together? You see the marriage breaking down. You see people in their marriages just broke down. And they observably hate each other. And yet they just keep going. You know, everyone knows this is in how this is going to end. And yet they keep dragging it out. And you'd be like, you know, why are you still together? Why? You know, y'all obviously can't stand to be in the same room with one another. How do you live with somebody that hates your guts? And the truth of the matter is they get to a point, it's like, yeah, but if I leave first, it's like they won. It's like she won. It's like he won. It's, if I'm the one that pulls the plug, it's like they won. I want to be the winner here. And so they continue on making each other miserable, hating each other. That's the population of the U.S. today. You know, and this thing is over. You step outside of it, because I step outside of it because I don't consider myself a part of it. I don't vote in it. I'm not participating. I just live here, trying to live the best life I can. We're going to get to that here in a minute. But just pull the plug already. Just why don't y'all just split? No, I've got to make them. You're not going to make a true believer communist see the light and take a different path. You're just trying to make them submit, to make them, to force them to bend to your will, and vice versa. You know, you're not going to make somebody that's not that bend to your will. But of course, that's always what leftism, that's always what liberalism, communism is what it's always about. It's always about enforcing their will and forcing you to submit. And it all just seems kind of silly. We got enough area here. Why don't we just all go our separate ways? Why don't we do that? Let's try something different. This marriage isn't working out. It's like the meme of Abraham Lincoln, and it says, if you try to leave me, I'll kill you, you know, to referencing the Civil War. That's where we're at. The marriage is done. This relationship is obviously doomed. It's way passed over. Sure, you've got people kind of in agreement that this war is horrible and silly, but at the end of the day, it doesn't change the fact that there is no unity. This marriage is over. Go our separate ways. Of course, people are always stuck in that, you know, false choice, that binary choice. Another thing I don't understand, your average American is, you have what we have here today. They call it capitalism. It's, we'll just use the term capitalism. When I say capitalism, I'm talking about what you see today, where, you know, corporations own the government, own the state, and communism. And we're basically, people are locked into that mindset that it's an either or. And you always see it presented that way from every aspect of the political spectrum in this country. You can have, oh, you a communist? Oh my gosh, capitalism has failed. Look at what capitalism has wrought. We need communism. Communism has never worked and it never will. If we had the free market functioning as it should, and then of course somewhere you throw the libertarians in there, that we don't need any government at all, and everybody could just magically respect each other's property and observe the non-aggression principle, and we don't even need a government. Which is the most silly view of all of them. Oh, the libertarian view is, yeah, those ways don't work. Our way, those ways have been tried and they don't work. Our way, that nobody has ever been silly enough to actually consider trying because it's so obvious, has so many obvious flaws from the get-go. That's the way. Is it? I always say, if your plan, you know, if you say, man, I got a plan, and your plan involves, starts off with, if everybody would just, you don't have a plan. You have a dream, an unrealistic one, because everybody is not going to. And that's a libertarian in a nutshell. We don't need a state. Why? What do you mean? Well, if everyone will just observe the non-aggression principle and, you know, we can just, everyone will just. Everyone is never going to just. You can give me a room of 20 people, you know, and set that room on fire, and I'll stand by the exit, and all we got to do is, if everyone will just line up and walk out the doors in an orderly fashion, we're all going to be fine. Trust me, everybody won't. Everybody won't. Some of them are going to stand there and film the fire with their cell phones for a TikTok video until the roof falls on them. Others are going to run to the door and shut it behind them, try to keep everyone else from getting out because somehow that's going to benefit them in some way. The rest of them will mull around and try to figure out what everyone else is going to do. Everybody is not going to. It's silly. It's a silly, silly, naive viewpoint. But this false binary choice, you got to do the communism or you got to do capitalism, what we got now. Like, there's never been any other choice. They've seen so many Hollywood movies about monarchy, they just think it's going to be some degenerate that sits there and, I don't know, orders your wife to his bedchamber and you can't do anything about it because he's the king. Never cursed any of these people. But they present that false choice to you because either one works for them. Either one keeps the same handful of people running things, the same oligarchy in charge. Communism, they just change titles, but there they are. At the top of the party, running things. So-called capitalism, there they are. The CEO, the chairman of the board, paying off the middle management politicians that serve as customer service and take the flack. When the peasants get a little riled up, they can go have another election and replace middle management with some other pre-screened, pre-selected figures to be put in there to also take the heat and things continue on. They don't want you thinking outside of that box. If you started talking about, let's just find capable people and put them in charge and have a monarchy of some sort, something, anything. They don't want anyone considering any form of government that might threaten the status quo of them running things. They don't care if it's communism. They don't care if it's so-called capitalism, as long as they're running the show. All this talk about the Great Reset 2030 agenda. And what's the ultimate goal? Them in charge of everything. Instead of having to do it in these different branches, they consolidate the operation. And they just run it from one central point. I see people, too, and they talk about, you know, I just mentioned 2030, the Great Reset, 2030 agenda. And people act as though it's inevitable. I refuse to have that mindset. I do. I refuse to have this mindset that these people, as far as they go, are somehow omnipotent. I do recognize that there is a central command, and it is Satan. You know, these servants of him don't necessarily realize that's what they're doing, and that's why all of their actions collectively, even though at times they oppose one another, they collectively come together and further the same agenda. Because there is a central, there is a monarch, as it were, that is directing the show, directing the production. And that is Satan. That is the consolidating force. That is where the overall, you know, trajectory, that's where it's coming from. Not one or, you know, this guy over here, this guy, this group over here. It's Satan. And some of those people probably do consciously worship Satan. We've seen some pretty good circumstantial evidence of that. But by and large, a lot of them serve Satan and they don't even know they're serving Satan. They just think they're doing their own thing and they don't have enough ability to step back and go, hey, everything I'm doing and these other people are doing are all heading in this same direction. I refuse to attach omnipotence to these people, and I damn sure refuse to attach omnipotence to Satan. I don't like it when I see people in general and believers, specifically have this doomsday mindset. It doesn't matter what you do. They're going to win. They always win. We can't be. And I tell people, you know, when I say, you know, I don't participate. I'm not voting. I'm not participating in the system. There's nothing you can do about it. You have to recognize the things you can't do anything about and accept that, because otherwise you just stress yourself out for nothing. And people will interpret that a lot of times as, you know, we can't beat them. It just doesn't matter. They always win. I refuse to give them that much credit. You know, I do. I refuse to give them that kind of power, because when these people, a lot of this insanity you see in the world around us, in this nation, in this country, it is because people are emotionally stressed. We're seeing more and more people going off. If you're driving down the road and you see somebody in a road rage and acting completely irrational, absolutely insane, it's because people are just, they've emotionally lost it, because you get so tied up emotionally in these things that you can't actually control. And they just, they go crazy. Satan is not omnipotent. And if Satan isn't omnipotent, George Soros damn sure isn't. Klaus Schwab damn sure isn't omnipotent. These people aren't all capable. You know, we're believers. Our Savior rose from the dead. We're on the winning team. These people are running around, as the saying goes, like their heads are on fire and their asses are catching, for a reason. Not because they're omnipotent. Quit participating. Quit being a part of it. It's fine. Look, I keep up on what's going on. I look at these things. I observe it. But I don't participate in it. And I damn sure am not getting emotionally invested in it. Stop getting emotionally invested in it. One of the things, since I haven't been on social media for years now, it is an amazing thing to be out of that and to step outside of it when so many people are in it. I told someone recently, I said, social media is a psyop. Because, you know, everybody, you say a psyop and people think it's some sort of false flag or something. You know, that's the only way they that registers for them. But psyop means psychological operation. And social media is the biggest psychological operation in the country right now. You know, when you remove yourself, if you're on social media, swear off that shit for 2 weeks. And step back from and then come back and see how crazy everybody is. And when you was in the middle of that craziness, you didn't even recognize it. Social media is a psyop. It's a psychological operation. You know, there's more to it than the algorithm pushes these stories to the front. The algorithm manipulates completely what you're seeing. I saw a deal recently, and they did a study, and didn't tell anyone they were doing a study, but they purposely flooded people's Facebook feed with negative information and then some other people with positive information. And lo and behold, the people that were flooded with negative stuff in their feed, which they were sitting there thinking, this is just what's going on, this is what's in my feed, they themselves started posting more negative stuff. In other words, it affected them, and vice versa. Same with the positive side. So what does that tell you? You think they're just going to let that kind of control just go by the wayside? No. I see people and they're so wound up. And you're like, what are you wound up about? Man, I saw on Twitter, I saw on Facebook. I read on Facebook. It usually starts with something like that. You know, look for it. People you talk to at your job or whatever, and you see them, they're wound up, and you're like, what's going on? Man, I saw on... Nine times out of ten, the first words out of their mouth is going to be, man, I read on Facebook. I read on Twitter. I saw this video. That's where it starts. We're on the winning team. What that means is even when you don't think at the time you're winning, you're winning. As a case in point, you know, I'm not on any social media. I praise God for that. But the reason I'm not on any social media is years ago, I've been essentially banned from every form of social media possible. Being banned was not an act of love from those doing the banning. Shut this guy up. But for me, it's a blessing. You see? I am so grateful not to be on any form of social media now that years have gone by. Sure, I did like everybody else getting banned and you making a new account with a little different name and ban dodging. You know, they ban you and you pop back up. They ban you and you pop back up. And they're trying to put in place, you got to put your phone number or something trying to keep you from coming back up. And people going to the extreme, you know. They got like fake phone numbers generated by the computer so they can get a new account on Twitter. It's such a blessing to be banned from social media. I'm outside. I wouldn't go back. If when Elon Musk took over Twitter and then said he was going to let a lot of people come back and he's going to let everybody come back. He didn't, but he said he was. And, Sven told me, he said, man, you ought to try getting back on Twitter. And I'm like, hell no. Not just no, my good friend, but hell no. I have no interest in that. Pay me to go back on any social media because I see it for what it is. It's a psyop. It's a psychological operation. It is a way to manipulate you emotionally, psychologically. I don't want any part of it. Come up out of them. What I'm saying, though, they're not omnipotent. They ban you because they want to shut you up. But even in this, for the believer, God turns that around and you wind up somewhere you need to be, somewhere better to be. You're on the winning side. As we navigate the crazy world, and this is kind of what I wanted to get to with all of this. The Bible says, essentially we should be content with where we are, with our station in life. That doesn't mean, you don't try to better your life, but it means be happy in the Lord with where you are. Whether you've got a lot, whether you've got little. Yes, I know the extremes exist. If you're homeless and a bum on the street and you've got 2 cents in your pocket and nothing to eat, you're not going to be satisfied with that, but that proves the rule. Those are the extremes. Most people aren't in that situation. More than likely, if you're sitting around listening to this, you're not a homeless person with 2 cents in your pocket. Be satisfied with what you have. Find a way to be content where you are, serve the Lord, move forward, let the world burn around you. This is all temporary, regardless. Do the best you can in life. I'm not saying don't have goals and don't try to better your life. You can do that and be satisfied and content with what you have. They're not mutually exclusive. They're not. You can try to make the best decisions you have. That's why God gave you a brain. That's why God gave you a mind. That's why God gave you free will so you could make the best decisions you can. You can do that. You can try to grow your business. You can try to, further your education so you can get a better job or whatever. You can do that. And at the same time, be content with where you are today. You can do both. Because if you're satisfied, if you're content in the Lord, because our ultimate goal, our ultimate reason for being here is salvation, is because Jesus is raised from the dead. The other things are what we're doing in the meantime. We know how the story ends. The story ends the same way for every single person on the face of the earth. So you can be content with where you are, happy with what you have, be grateful for what you've got. While also having goals, using your free will, making decisions, trying to better your life, trying to get to a better place. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you have a mindset, for instance, that if I can just do this and get here, always say all of these, a lot of times, a lot of this stuff comes down to the servant-master relationship. You know, if you're content where you're at right now, and you have a goal, I want to do this, and that goal is a servant for you. You know, it gives you something that you're working towards. You're using your free will to achieve that goal. There's nothing wrong with it. The goal is in its proper role. It is a servant to you. It serves as something to work towards while you're living your life every day. However, if the roles get inverted, and this is where you get in trouble because this becomes idolatry, you know, and the goal suddenly becomes consuming. It goes from, this is something I'm going to try to do. These are the steps I'm going to try. I'm going to see if I can use my free will and make decisions that get me closer to this goal. Well, you go from that to, I cannot be happy until I achieve this goal. You see, now the goal is no longer a servant. It's your master. You're serving it. You cannot be happy until you achieve this goal. And it's doomed to failure. Oh, you might achieve the goal, and you know what you're going to find when you get it? You're not happy. Now you've grown accustomed to not being happy because you couldn't be happy back here with what you had, and you convinced yourself that the one thing that would make you happy was achieving this goal, and you became a slave to the goal. You became a servant to the goal. Once you achieve, if you achieve that goal, you're still going to be miserable. And what are you going to do? 9 times out of 10, you're going to create a new goal to be your God, to be your idol. That's why you see these people who are old and they're ancient and they're billionaires and you know they get to go to the World Economic Forum and they have more money than they're ever going to spend and they're so damn ancient they could die next week. If it wasn't for the adrenochrome and the blood transfusions from infants or whatever the hell they're doing, they would already be dead. And they're out there going crazy trying to get even more money. And it's like if you started spending today, you couldn't spend the money you got. See, they're enslaved. They're not having, that's all they know. They've got to serve their God. You can have goals. Make sure you don't become a servant to it. You can have money. Make sure money always serves you, not you serving money. These things are fine as long as you keep the relationship proper. It's got to serve you. You cannot become a slave to it because now you've tripped up and now you're in idolatry. As long as those things are serving you and they're your servant, you're good to go. You know, keep the roles right. Be content with what you have. You can have goals. You can be trying to do something better with your life. We all should. But to do that, you have to be content with where you're at. You have to say, I have a goal that I can do this someday, you know, to try to do this. And I have a plan. This is how I'm going to try to get there. That may happen next week. It may happen 10 years from now. If I die in 5 years, it's not going to happen at all. So I'm going to wake up today and thank God for what I have. I'm going to be happy and grateful for the life I've got now. Today, I have these goals to work towards. You have these goals to work towards. That's fine. But if you're not going to be happy until you achieve that, then you're doing it wrong. It's all about keeping things in their proper perspective, in their right place. And this is what's going to get us through these crazy days, because these are crazy days. Like I say, it's time to pull the scab off. This thing is done. The American experiment is over, and it is going to end. This is not going to go on, I don't think, another 10 years personally, but at some point it is going to end. And things are obviously between now and then, they're going to get way crazier. And this is the way you're going to keep your sanity. You wake up today and you're like, you know, economic uncertainty is upon us now. And in 6 months, it's going to be way worse in all likelihood, the reality. But you know what? You wake up today, you've got a roof over your head. your belly's full. You know, your lights are turned on. Be grateful and happy, content with what you've got. Plan ahead. Look through these things and say, man, I see bad things coming down the road. What can I do to prepare? What can I do to protect myself and my family for what's coming? But you know what? I'm not going to miss what's here today. I'm not going to miss what I have today. I'm not going to sit here and doom scroll social media for 6 hours, you know, until my hair is sticking out and I got dark circles under my eyes. You have to say, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get up. I'm going to be grateful to God. I'm here today. I'm going to try to learn something about the Lord today. When you're living your life like that, they don't have any power over you. If you're doom scrolling for 6 hours and getting emotionally worked up, they're controlling you. You may not realize it, but they're controlling you. They have power over you. You take that power back. You say, no, I'm going to get wrapped up in all of that. Don't participate. Don't be a part of them. They're going to do what they're going to do. Be content with where you're at. Make the best decisions you can. Navigate the best way you can. And as you're going to find, look, we're on, if you're a Christian believer, you're on the winning side. You know, it's not doom and gloom. You're on, the Satan is not omnipotent, and his servants in this world damn sure aren't. They're running around, they're a bunch of madmen running around chasing money, you know, chasing some kind of immortality that they're never going to achieve in this world. They're insane. They really are. You look at the things they chase, have this transhumanism, and they're going to transfer their consciousness into a computer. Look, they're insane. It sounds crazy. It's because it is. They're insane. You're looking at people that are never going to be content. This is what's driving them insane. You're on the winning side. Chill out. What do you got today? Be grateful for what you got today. Yes, but these things are coming. Yeah, we'll deal with them as they get here. Today, make the best decisions to put yourself in the best place you can be for whatever comes around. But don't get so tied up that you miss it. Today is the day the Lord has given you, another day of life in this world to learn about him, to grow spiritually, which is the whole reason we're here. We have a reason to be here. We have a purpose in this life. We fulfill that and let them go off and be nuts. Let them go off and be insane. Let them go off the deep end. We're just not going to join them in the endeavor. We're going to wrap up on that note. Again, this airs after Easter, but I hope you had a great Easter and a chance to reflect on the hope that we have in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, I hope I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.